Nurse, don't move my leg like that. It hurts.
I know, honey. I know how it hurts.
Oh, no, you don't. How can you?
Because I had polio once myself.
You did? You had polio and got better?
Look at me. I'm well enough to stand here and exercise you.
Gee, then I...
You've even got a better chance. They've learned a lot more about polio since I had it. Tired, honey?
No. No, I'm not tired. Keep exercising it. It doesn't seem to hurt as much anymore.
Living 1949, brought to you each week by NBC and its affiliated stations, holds up its radio mirror in the midst of what we have come to fear as the infantile paralysis season, to bring you the latest facts about the progress we are making against this dread disease. Progress so hopeful that we can safely entitle our drama document, Polio, Virus with its Back Against the Wall. Your narrator, Kenneth Banghart.
Greetings, America. In hospital and medical center, in research laboratory and in the field, the order of the day is forward march to the conquest of polio. Listen to the words of the most recent pamphlet of the Public Affairs Committee, prepared by Alton Blakesley with the cooperation of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis and the New York Academy of Medicine. Mr. Blakesley says,
"The conquest of polio is now in sight. No one can predict just when the victory will come or in what way. But medical science, with your help, is making such progress that there is real cause for optimism."
And again, Dr. Harry M. Weaver, research director of the National Foundation, declares,
"One can state with complete confidence that if adequate funds to support the program of research are maintained, the answer to poliomyelitis can and will be obtained within the foreseeable future."
That, then, is the sane, the hopeful, the long-range view. We'll do well, America, to bear it in mind as we learn to face calmly and with a minimum of fear the more immediate, less encouraging fact.
In 32 of the 48 states, investigators report as of mid-July 1949 a marked increase in the number of cases of infantile paralysis over the same period in 1948. In the nation as a whole, the incidence of polio is 35% ahead of last year.
Yes, in our relentless war on this mysterious crippling enemy, there's a paradox, a seeming contradiction. For while medical scientists tell us today that eventually victory is assured, nonetheless, polio does seem to be scoring local gains. 2.5 times as many cases have been reported in the last 5 years as in the 5 years previous. All the more reason, then, to keep our heads, to avoid the senseless fear and panic which all too often mark epidemic outbreaks of the disease. The scene, just 1 year ago, on a passenger train, making all local stops as it moves slowly across the sweltering countryside in one of our southern states.
Greenville! Next stop, Greenville!
Oh, dear, let me get that window down, quick. Oh, you, mister, you...
Yeah, lady?
Your window, it's open.
So what?
Close it, can't you see? I've got 2 children with me.
What do you want me to do, smother them to death?
What's the matter with you? Didn't you hear what the conductor said? Don't you ever read the papers? This is Greenville. There's an epidemic of polio in Greenville. Now will you close it?
Okay, lady, okay.
A public health officer in the same southern state, looking through his morning mail in July 1948, glances at a letter, tosses it wearily on his desk.
Oh, good Lord, another one.
What's the matter, doctor?
That makes 6 since Tuesday. All with the same crazy, panic-ridden idea.
How to stop the epidemic?
Right. With bonfires. They want us to burn bonfires in the public streets. They tell us polio is caused by sunshine. Sunshine?
Heavens, this isn't the Middle Ages.
No, it isn't. Fear, Benny. Human fear doesn't look at the calendar or the century.
These are the voices of superstition, of medieval dread. Voices which are bound to persist in the presence of a disease which strikes with mysterious force in an epidemic form. But those voices today can be muffled by the sound of other voices, voices in which there is reassurance and hope.
You had polio and got better?
I'm well enough to stand here and exercise you.
Today we know 40 to 60% of the children or adults who do get the illness in recognizable form will recover completely, or almost completely, without any visible evidence of paralysis. Further, we know
another 25 to 30% will recover with only a mild degree of paralysis, able to carry on ordinary activities and live pretty much as they had planned to do.
And still further, we know only 15 to 25% will be left more or less severely handicapped, unable to use some muscles. But rehabilitation and special services can do wonders with them. This, then, is polio, reduced to facts. Today, living 1949. Believe it or not, it's an uncommon disease. It's so uncommon that a score or more recognized cases out of every 100,000 population is regarded as an epidemic. But polio is a serious disease. Serious not only because recovery takes so long and is so expensive, but also because each year, year after year, some 5,000 children may be left permanently handicapped by it, and some 8% may die. We fear polio, you and I and your neighbors. Fear it largely because it's a mystery to us. Fear it the way men have always feared something they don't quite understand. Today, we propose to clear away for you some of this mystery, show you how science is slowly but surely fitting together this most intricate of medical jigsaw puzzles. And here's how.
We ask you to visualize polio as a strange, unfamiliar house. A house down one road in the fast-building neighborhood of medical knowledge. In the outside darkness, we can't quite make out its shape and design. Inside, only a few rooms are lighted, some dimly, some more brightly than others. If you would know polio, enter with us now and walk through this forbidding house.
We are knocking now upon one of the tightly locked doors, the door marked Cause. Let's see what we can find out about Cause.
Come in, Mr. Banghart.
How do we get polio?
Well, unfortunately, we don't know yet how polio spreads.
But you know what makes us sick, Doctor?
Oh, yes. Our enemy is a tiny virus which can't be seen.
How tiny?
Well, much smaller than bacteria. You see this pin?
Yes.
We estimate that 25 million polio viruses could be placed on the head of a pin.
Incredible.
Yes, the incredible smallness of a polio virus is one of the handicaps we have to face in fighting it. Unlike bacteria, which are alive and travel in the bloodstream, the virus is altogether different. It's a complete parasite, working and reproducing inside the kind of cells it likes, nerve cells.
But haven't you learned anything at all about how we catch polio?
Well, listen.
Wait again, Larry. Well, that, Doctor, I take it, is a party.
Check. Because there is evidence pointing to the spread of the virus from one person to another through close contact, we usually warn people to be cautious of large gatherings, parties, movies, crowds of all kinds, during epidemics. Then, too,
dinner's on. Come on, everybody.
The polio virus may be taken in one's food. What's more, it may enter from virus-contaminated dishes or hands, float in the dust in the air.
Uh-huh, I see.
Sometimes I examine a person in my office and insist,
Doc, I never felt better in my life. Why do you ask?
The reason I ask is because laboratory tests have shown time and time again that the patient harbored the polio virus. There were traces of it in his intestinal tract. And yet,
Doc, I tell you, I never felt better in my life.
Well, Doctor, can such a person be a carrier?
Well, maybe. But why some of us are resistant to the disease and others are not, well, we have no idea. Again, I might question the parent of a youngster with polio. Has Jimmy been swimming anywhere lately, Mr. Dixon?
Why, let me see. Well, yes, come to think of it, last week Jimmy went swimming in the lake.
So we hustle over to the lake, take a sample of the water, discover the water is polluted with sewage. The virus is found in sewage. But again, we have no proof that the water gave Jimmy the virus.
Uh-huh. Well, here's something. Can you tell us why the disease blazes up in summer?
No. Cases occur throughout the year. South Dakota last fall had an epidemic with snow on the ground. But they do increase in summer. Why, we still can't tell. Obviously, there is a reason.
Well, then, Doctor, how would you sum up your knowledge on how we get polio?
Well, the sad truth of the matter, Mr. Banghart, is that as yet we don't know whom it will attack next, where or when or how to prevent it.
We are now knocking on the door of the house of polio marked symptoms. Listen.
I've got a headache, Mommy. I've got a headache.
Doctors tell us that headache is one of the early and common signs of polio. Other common early signs?
Sore throat, slight fever, constipation, nausea, fatigue, listlessness.
Well, might you complain impatiently.
Those signs are too darn vague and indefinite. It can mean some other illness coming on, or even just a slight upset.
The answer? True, my friend, true. But they bear watching just the same, particularly during the summer months. If you want more important signs of infantile paralysis, give heed to these.
My neck, Mommy. My neck stiff. My back, too.
Let me feel you.
Oh, don't touch my leg, Mom. They hurt.
These signs are more unmistakable. For a bird's eye view of just what happens when polio strikes, we offer...
Polio is generally believed to be primarily a disease of the spinal cord and nervous system, the most serious type occurring when the virus reaches the brain. This type is the most deadly, but fortunately, only 6 out of every 100 cases are of this type.
On the damage caused?
Well, that depends on how far the virus travels and how many nerve cells it damages or destroys. The paralysis may be temporary or permanent, but even when the motor nerve cells serving the muscles are killed, there are often still enough nerve cells left alive to permit some movement and control.
On the length of the attack?
Usually, the virus has done all the dirty work it's going to do within a few days, the paralyzing stage lasting a relatively short time. That's why bed rest is important at once. You can make things worse if you try to buck the disease and keep active.
Having explored the rooms marked cause and symptoms in the dread house of polio, let's go into another room marked treatment. This room is much better lighted.
Hello, Mr. Banghart.
Hello.
My name is Mary Turner. I'm the physical therapist who was treating the girl with polio earlier. Remember?
Yes, I do.
You know, I like my work. In fact, I'm devoting my whole life to it. You see, I once had polio myself. Yes, I was just about 15 years old.
I don't know, Mother. I don't know what it is. I just feel awful.
Did you eat anything? Anything you shouldn't.
No, Mother. Please go away and let me sleep. I'm sick.
At first, I didn't know I had polio. I was sicker than most. So sick, I didn't care about anything. I just wanted to curl up and die. I guess the disease had hit me pretty bad.
I think the best thing to do is to call an ambulance, get her to the hospital at once, Mrs. Turner.
Hospital?
Yes. I'm not so sure yet, but I believe Mary's coming down with infantile paralysis.
Infantile paralysis? Oh, doctor... I was taken to a hospital and put in an isolation ward.
I'm sorry. No visitors for Mary Turner.
I was isolated for two reasons. To keep me from spreading the virus to others and to protect me from contracting other diseases that might endanger my life. Then the doctors went to work.
Legs and arms paralyzed, neck muscles partially paralyzed, some muscles in the shoulders, back and abdomen affected, breathing muscles temporarily quitting on the job.
I was put into an iron lung. Until my muscles again took over their normal task. I was in great pain.
I hurt. Nurse, I hurt.
Where, dear?
All over. All over.
Well, I'm going to apply some hot packs to your legs and back, Mary. Don't be afraid now.
Oh.
That's a good girl. They're nothing but wool cloths dipped in hot water. They'll relax your muscles, make you feel better.
There wasn't then, and there still isn't, anything anyone could do to stop the polio virus from going through my spinal cord. Nobody could, nor can they now, prevent the paralysis from occurring. That's why, in the early stages, the doctors couldn't tell my parents much of anything. Will she be permanently paralyzed, Doctor?
I don't know.
Will she be crippled?
I can't say.
Well, just what are her chances of pulling through?
I wish I knew, Mr. Turner.
Though the doctors didn't know much about how to stop the damage from the disease, they did know how to treat the resulting weakness and stiffness of the muscles and joints.
I'll be gentle, Mary. You grit your teeth now and show me you can take it,
Okay, nurse.
Gently, she began stretching my muscles, exercising them, even though it caused me some pain. I know now why she was doing it. It was important to preserve the length of the affected muscles and to prevent permanent deformities like twisting or other unshapeness. They paid particular attention to any of my muscles that gave signs of developing deformities, just as I do with my patients today. Early in my sickness, I began helping myself along the road to recovery, though I didn't realize it. It all happened when the doctor noticed that I had a radio next to my bed, and that every once in a while...
Nurse, have you noticed that every so often she turns her head to look at that radio beside her bed?
Yes, now that you mention it, I have noticed.
Mm-hmm. And in spite of the fact that her neck muscles are weak.
Yes, that's true, Doctor.
Now watch, nurse. Mary, would it bother you, dear, if I moved your radio to the other side of your bed for a little while?
No, Doctor. That's all right.
Thank you. There we are.
Why did you do that, Doctor?
Well, nurse, you see, I want to make her use the muscles on the other side of her neck. Bring the strength back to them. Same time, I don't want to permit the muscles on one side to grow stronger than those on the other, a condition that might twist her neck permanently.
It was a small thing, but significant, and I'm grateful to this day that he caught it. Well, for 8 weeks I lay in that bed, and each day my muscles were exercised to make them stronger and to prevent them from shrinking with disuse. So that I'd avoid deformities in the weakened muscles, they even told me how to lie in bed.
Stretch your legs straight out here. That's a girl. And keep them that way for me, hmm?
Gradually, the doctors learned from making tests in my spinal cord.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Turner, I have happier news for you this time.
What is it, Doctor?
Yes?
From the tests I took of your Mary yesterday, we can see that while some of the nerve cells in her spinal cord have been affected by the poliovirus, nevertheless, it appears that many of the cells will recover slowly.
You mean
that Mary...
Yes. Mary has an excellent chance of recovery.
After that, they began exercising me in a warm pool. There, buoyed up by the water, I could make my muscles do more work, retrain them more easily. But they were careful not to let me get tired.
That's all for today, Mary.
Oh, but it feels so good. So good to move. Can't I stay a little while longer?
Tomorrow, not today, and that's a promise.
And at times, when I rested in bed, they had me wear a supporting corset and splints on my arms to prevent some of my muscles from contracting and becoming deformed. Now, let me see. I was stricken in September. By May, I was sitting in a wheelchair, and by June...
I can walk. Mother, Daddy, look! I can walk!
I was able to go back to school 1 year after the polio had struck. My only after effect is that my right arm isn't quite as strong as my left, but that doesn't bother me, even in the strenuous work I've chosen for myself, that of physical therapist in one of New York's busiest hospitals. In fact, I'm making the experience I went through pay off for others. For every time a child says to me,
"Please, nurse, don't exercise my leg like that. It hurts."
I can say, and honestly, I know, honey. I know how it hurts. And somehow, when they find out why I know, they change. They don't seem to care when it does hurt a little, because looking at me, they know it's going to help them, that they can get better too.
And so, thanks to the modern treatment for polio, as opposed to the old methods of immobilizing the muscles in casts and splints, minor miracles have been performed in combating paralysis, and the muscles slowly rebuilt to usefulness. Much of the credit for the general adoption of this type of treatment goes to Sister Kenny, who holds a somewhat different view about the nature of the disease than most doctors. In effect, Sister Kenny believes...
The virus affects peripheral nerves and the tissues, including muscles, and is thus primarily a disease of the muscles, not primarily a disease of the nervous system.
But the majority of doctors, basing their opinion upon actual postmortems and control laboratory tests, believe...
In our opinion, there is little evidence to support this theory. Findings so far with microscopes and experiments indicate that polio is mainly a disease of the central nervous system.
You, the public, however, may take comfort from the notice that while this question of the nature of the disease may still be said to remain open...
The important fact for the public is that the treatment of the disease is essentially the same as far as physical therapy is concerned,
And with trained personnel, the results are similar in the two schools of thought, regardless of concept.
And now in the House of Polio, we find ourselves in a vestibule, a corridor off which lead many rooms, each one of which may well be an avenue to hope. For in each door we read the word research. Listen.
Yale University, Doctors Moore, Blagden, Wheeler, proceed at once to Bleakersville for investigation of polio epidemic. Wire ahead for local cooperation.
Yes, today we have special medical detectives called epidemiologists who swoop down upon a polio-infested community to study at first hand each epidemic. Patiently, they seek the bits of evidence that may solve the crime and mystery of how polio spreads.
That was August 14th, Mrs. Taylor?
That's right.
Then where'd you go?
Well, then we loaded our children in the car and left for a trip
Questions and answers. More people and more questions and answers, all carefully noted. For if they could but learn how polio spreads, they would have one means of protecting us from it. So far,
we are still helpless to hit the source of spread, much less dry it up. We've suspected it's mosquitoes, but to date they've been cleared of any guilt.
Well, have you learned anything at all from these scientific forays?
Oh, yes. For example, we've checked upon the speed of epidemics. In one case, starting from a fairly well-defined center, it spread outward at the rate of half a mile a day.
Summing up, then?
Well, many of our leads have been disappointing, of course. But each quest has helped. For by elimination, slowly but surely, the heart of the unknown is being narrowed down.
Let's wander further in another of the rooms marked research, among the test tubes and laboratory equipment. Well, Doctor?
I'm investigating the sources of resistance to polio, Mr. Banghart.
Well, tell us something about it, Doctor.
Well, we've found that polio seems to affect well-nourished, healthy children as well as poorly nourished ones.
Well, what do you conclude from that?
Well, this may be because the virus is a parasite, needs healthy cells in which to grow.
Uh-huh. But it could be a question of diet.
Well, diet may hold the answer, or part of it. I've been experimenting with these mice here.
Uh-huh.
I found out that the mice which are deprived of vitamin B1 are more resistant to polio.
Oh, and we can conclude then
that... No, there is as yet no finding that humans deficient in vitamin B1 are more resistant to polio.
Mr. Banghart, I'm concerned with the change in the age pattern.
Uh-huh.
Infantile paralysis isn't so infantile anymore. The disease is affecting more children over 5, more teenagers, more adults.
Why, Doctor, why?
I wish I knew. So far, we've only theories.
We've become convinced now, Mr. Banghart, that polio is not one single disease caused by a single virus, but rather a family of related viruses.
Well, that's progress.
Some. We've already come to know at least 3 strains of poliovirus in humans. And we've discovered that in laboratory experiments, there are vague indications that animals inoculated with one of the known strains of virus, for example, will get primarily paralysis of the forelegs. Or if inoculated with another, paralysis of the chest. Whether it's so with human beings, we can't tell yet. We're also playing around with the theory of different strains of virus in different parts of the world. What's your problem here, Doctor?
Well, here, Mr. Banghart, we've succeeded in securing a high concentration of one kind of virus, a type which affects animals only, not humans.
But it's a step forward, right?
Oh, absolutely, Mr. Banghart. Once we achieve the same results with a virus that attacks humans, it will make it easier to work up vaccines.
Say, what's this instrument here?
That's a powerful electron microscope developed by RCA. With it, we've actually seen tiny spherical bodies which may be nearly pure virus. And once we can see and study the virus itself, we can perhaps tell differences in strains and go much further and faster in the work for a vaccine.
My department's antibiotics, Mr. Banghart.
Oh, yes, those chemicals produced by moles and yeast living in the soil.
Right. New ones like oromycin and chloromycetin cure human diseases caused by bugs which, on the germ ladder, lie between bacteria and viruses. This progress is a step toward helping us find some something that affects viruses. We're also hoping for a quick test to tell whether a person is getting polio. Our present test, injecting monkeys or other animals with suspected material, is costly and takes days or weeks.
Mr. Banghart, we fellows over here are investigating the use of drugs against polio.
Well, how are you doing?
Well, so far, we must confess that we've found no magic bullet to kill the poliovirus yet.
Oh.
But since we've already found several chemical compounds that protect animals from other viruses that resemble the poliovirus, there are hopeful reasons for believing that one or more will be found that will protect human beings.
Successively, America, we have opened the doors in the forbidding house of polio inscribed cause, symptoms, treatment, research. And the further we penetrated, the less forbidding, the less mysterious our disease became. For this we have discovered, that men are at work, men who know their business, that these men of science are making progress, that these men who spend their every waking hour living in the house of polio have hope. Indeed, as the report of the Public Affairs Committee puts it,
with all its puzzles and apparent contradictions, the polio virus is gradually being backed against the wall. Progress in research is coming slowly, but lately the pace has speeded up and brought clear-cut hopes for a vaccine or drug against this disease.
But as we wait for the victory we're all contributing, working, and praying for, let us open the final door that stands closed before us, the door that bears the single arresting word, caution.
Come in, Mr. Banghart. Here's where we specialize in tips for parents. When polio strikes your community, keep a sharp eye on your children. Watch for weather vanes of polio.
I've got a headache, Mother, and my stomach's upset.
That's a weather vane. Here are some others.
A tired feeling, nausea, pains or stiffening in the muscles, fever.
That may indicate something else, but play safe. Next, avoid crowds. There is no way of telling who has the virus, who is becoming sick, who is a healthy, unaffected carrier. Under epidemic conditions, keep your children, insofar as possible, off trains, buses, boats, beaches. Don't be afraid to tell that youngster.
That's enough running around for now, son. You're getting too tired.
Yes, over fatigue. Also chilling in late hours. They lower resistance to the virus. If you must, face this situation.
Sorry, son. I can't take you swimming there. Those waters have been declared polluted.
And do not swim in polluted waters. Attacks of polio have followed after such experiences. Keep clean.
Young man, you go right upstairs and wash your hands before eating.
That's a very good idea. And keep your garbage covered and your house screened. And if the occasion arises for a question like this one...
Well, what do you think, doctor? Should we take Jenny's tonsils out now or wait?
Consult your family doctor before having a child's tonsils or adenoids removed during summer months. While some nose and throat doctors doubt that there is very much danger of a virus invasion after a tonsillectomy, there is some evidence that it may happen. During an epidemic, a child's tonsil should be removed only after the most careful consideration of the possible danger.
Protect your child against polio, America, by all means. But don't let fear rule you at the expense of the child's freedom. For you dare not restrict him too much without doing him possible emotional harm. And don't blame yourself or feel guilty if your child contracts the disease. Since we don't know how polio is spread from one person to another, there's no reason to blame yourself for his getting it. Unfortunately, even the precautions you've just heard are not guaranteed precautions against polio. Until science can tell us more, do the best you can this summer and every summer with the hints that science has so far been able to give us. Taking courage from the hopeful news...
The conquest of polio is now in sight. No one can predict just when the victory will come or in what way. But medical science, with your help, is making such progress that there is real cause for optimism.
Living 1949 is prepared and presented for the University of the Air by an NBC special program staff under the supervision of Wade Arnold. Lou Hazem writes the scripts. Kenneth Banghart was your narrator today. Music is composed and conducted by Roy Shield. This program is directed by Jack Cuney. We wish to thank the Public Affairs Committee, New York City, for the use of its pamphlet, Polio Can Be Conquered, by Alton Blakesley. We invite you to keep abreast of Living 1949 by listening next week to
Big Top and Midway.
Van Johnson may call you on Hollywood Calling today on NBC.